God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Great. Welcome, everybody. So you're in the sponsorship workshop, so if that's not what you intended, too bad. The doors are closed, so you're not going anywhere. I got you for an hour. Oh, my goodness. So I'm going to have some pictures passing around. They'll be coming around of what I used to look like, and it will show you that I did earn my seat here. So just to qualify, for people who don't know me, I have 23 and a half years of abstinence, and I've been maintaining for almost 21 years about 120-pound weight loss. So thank you. No, that's fine. Thanks. And I say that in this particular workshop because when I share with you my experience, strength, and hope, especially in sponsorship, I want you to know that I've had these experiences, right? I've sponsored many, many, many people. I've been sponsored at all levels of sponsorship, and I've been around the program for a very long time. So hopefully I can share some experience, strength, and hope with you, and maybe answer some of your questions that you may have about sponsorship at the end. So if there's any questions that you do have, maybe jot them down, and then at the end I'll open it up for questions. We'll see if we can maybe answer some questions. I will also, in my talk, address some questions that I've been asked many, many times. So that way, you know, I figure a lot of times we have questions and we're afraid to ask. So I kind of ask them and answer them for you. So don't worry about that. Okay, so just to get started, I was thinking about it, and I'm actually going to stand up if that's okay. Okay, so the first thing that I want to say, and I will say that sponsorship right now is my passion in the program. Over the 23 years that I've been here, I've had different passions along my way. Basically, you know, wherever I was at or what I needed to work on. So a few years into my abstinence, and I got into maintenance. That was sort of my focus, so I started maintenance meetings and did a lot of work in that area. Then I got into some deeper childhood work, and that was my passion, and I really tried to share that with my sponsees and with other people, anyone who would listen. And now, over the last year or so, my passion has been strengthening sponsorship in HOW. Obviously, one person at a time. But I know, especially in our area in Las Vegas, that meetings have been dwindling and that our fellowship is getting smaller. And what I hear from other people in other areas is that it's the same all over. So, and I was thinking about that, and I really feel that although getting the word out to people to get them into the program is definitely something that we want to do. You know, we're attraction, not promotion. So, but you can't attract anybody if you don't let them know what you're doing, and if we don't go out there and let people know that we're here, and that, you know, they don't have to have their stomachs opened. They could actually come here without any, you know, incisions of any kind. So that's really important, and obviously doing that. But my feeling was that if we do that, then we have to do something about what we do with them when they get here. And that's my concern, because I have seen over the years people come in and they just sort of fall through the cracks. And I really feel that strong sponsorship is a key. The truth is that 12-step programs are based on sponsorship. I mean, that is the foundation of a 12-step program, is one compulsive eater talking to another, sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and guiding them along this road. So if sponsorship is so important, then learning how to sponsor in the most effective way should also be important. So in Las Vegas, we've put together a series of sponsorship workshops that we've been doing, and it's really been very helpful, because what we're discovering is that a lot of people really don't know how to sponsor the way it's written. And I don't know if they just haven't been given the information or they're not reading the information, because all the information is in the literature. It's in the Forever Abstinent Gray Book. It's in the Blue Sponsor Book. All the information you need is in there. But it isn't getting transmitted, either through the sponsorship or, you know, however that's happening. So, you know, part of my talk today is going to be about specifics of things that I've discovered over the years that seem to be gray areas or areas where there's misinterpretation. I mean, the truth is everything is open to interpretation. And if you want to manipulate the food plan, you absolutely can. You know, there's ways to read the food plan in any which way you want it to be. You know, so the trick is, how do we become consistent? How do we all be doing the same food plan? That's kind of the point. You know, when POW started, the point was, let's all be doing the same food plan so that when I stand up here and I say to you, I'm abstinent, you know what that means, right? We're all doing the same food plan. But if we don't know what the food plan is, or we're not reading it, then we don't know, and then we're not passing it on. So one of the things that I always say when I start talking about sponsorship is that the best way to be a good sponsor is to work a good program, because you can't give away what you don't have. So the first key, if you think, well, I'm not, you know, I can't be a sponsor, I don't know how to sponsor, I don't have enough time or whatever, it doesn't matter. All you have to do is be working a good program, because the best way to sponsor is by example. And for me, I will say that I have never asked a sponsee to do something that I haven't done or am not willing to do. And I lead by example. I can't ask a sponsee to come to the meeting on time and I come late. That doesn't work, right? So I have to be an example. So if you work a good program and you understand the aspects of the program, the abstinence, the service, all of the different, the tools, if you understand and you do those things the way it's written, that's how you will sponsor. And the people that you sponsor, you will pass that on, and then they will pass it on. And that's how we strengthen sponsorship in the fellowship, one sponsor at a time. So it's really important. So a few of the things that I want to talk, and I kind of want to go through the different levels of sponsorship and address some of the issues that I feel are a problem. One is, and I will say this, that abstinence is not recovery, right? Abstinence is required for recovery, but just being abstinent is not recovery, right? That's a diet. So, but abstinence is extremely important, because if I'm not abstinent, I'm dead. So knowing the food plan and knowing how to sponsor the food plan is really important. And there's a lot of things that people don't know in the food plan. And you know, and I'll open up for questions later if you have any specifics, but I just want to address certain basic things. Like, I hear people tell me many times that they're in the program for months or whatever, and they don't do grains. I don't do grains. And there's not an option to not do grains. Nowhere in the food plan does it say you have the option to not do grains. Now, it's confusing for people, because in the food plan, where it lists what you eat at each meal, it says grains at breakfast, lunch, and dinner with the word optional. So people think that that means grains are optional. They are not. It says there, if you read it, that you have to have 2 grains a day. It's optional which meal you have them at. So you can have it at breakfast and lunch, or lunch and dinner, or breakfast and dinner. But you don't get to say, I don't have grains. And my question to myself, because I try not to get in other people's business, is, you know, well, what is your sponsor doing? If you have a sponsor who knows the food plan, then how are you hearing your sponsee's food and they're not doing grains, right? So this is why it's so important that everybody is on the same page. If I'm sponsoring someone and they say to me, I'm not going to do grains, I would say, no, you are doing grains, but what's the problem? And then we would discuss. And invariably, I hear grains set up craving. That I eat grains and then I want to go out. Or eat grains and I want them at every meal. You know, it's like, so I just can't have them. And my answer is, that is not a solution. Right? The solution is, one, either finding the grains that don't set you up, or what I've discovered is that grains and fats together set up craving. So I tell my sponsees, you eat the grains, you do not mix it with your fat. Right? You put your fat on your that's not going to set up craving. You put your fat on your protein, but you do not put fats in your grain. These are the kinds of things you learn, right? As working your own program and then sponsoring, these are the things you tell. Other things are, you know, I'm an addict. I assume all of you are addicts. One of the things we do as addicts is we try to find loopholes. We try to rationalize what we want, because I want what I want. And if the food plan doesn't say it, I can try to make it say it, by manipulating it. And it's a sponsor's job to not let that happen. You know, I can't make you follow the food plan, but I can also not endorse when you come up with ways to manipulate the food plan, because then I'm not helping you. As a sponsor, I'm not your friend. That doesn't mean I don't love my sponsees. I do. But that's not my job, to be your friend. You know, if you want a friend, someone's going to say, oh, gee, yeah, you could eat that. You find somebody else. You didn't ask me to do that. As your sponsor, you asked me to tell you the truth. And the only person in the world who's going to tell you the truth without any agenda is your sponsor. So as a sponsor, you have to be willing to say, you know what? That's not on the food plan. You don't get to eat that. Well, so-and-so said that they're eating it. You know, it's like, that doesn't matter. If we're following the food plan, we follow the food plan. It's written down. If it's not on the food plan, I don't eat it. And if it's not on the food plan, my sponsees don't eat it. And I would hope that their sponsees don't eat it either. And that's how we become consistent. And it really scares me when I hear people say, oh, well, I had, you know, my grain was, you know, I'm sorry to mention food, but that's important. You know, there is no on the food plan. That's something I hear all the time. Now, can I rationalize? Well, there's, and then there's, and then, so I just put that all together and I come up with, well, no, it doesn't work that way. It's not on the food plan, right? So it's really important as a sponsor, especially in the first 30 days and the first 60 days of sponsoring somebody, that you know the food plan. One of the traps that happens as a sponsor is you get comfortable with eating what you eat. So like I eat very simple. I don't eat a lot of variety. I don't play with food. I don't try to make it taste like stuff that I don't eat. I'm very simple with my food. I want to spend 99% of my time not with the food. So I'm very simple. So I know. But if I have a sponsee who wants to eat something that I don't eat, I have to know what the portion is, if it's okay, how she's eating, how they're cooking it. You know, it's like I have to ask those questions so that I make sure that the information I give them is correct. If I don't do that, then I'm not helping. You know, I mean, a monkey can take somebody's food and not say anything. That's not what a sponsor is for. A sponsor is to say, you know what, I'm hearing that you're eating that every day, and you're like romanticizing that thing, and you can't wait to eat it again. I'm thinking there's a problem there. That's why we hear it, right? And I've heard people say, I don't know, you know, it's like, well, I committed this, but then I ate that. And I understand that sometimes you find yourself in a place that doesn't have what you committed, but the whole point of committing is to not decide at the last minute what to eat. Right? So as a sponsor, I say, you do not eat non-committed foods, which means if you committed in the morning and in the afternoon you find that what you committed is not available, then you call and you tell me what you're going to eat instead, so you're eating committed food. Now, why is that important? Like, do I care, really, if you change? No, I really don't. But the truth is, if you do that and not commit it, then the next day, you're going to want to do something else, and your head's going to say, well, I don't have to commit it. And then the next day, you're going to do something else that's actually not allowed on the program, but because you didn't commit it to me, I can't tell you it's not on the program, and now you've eaten something that's not abstinent. And you may think that that's crazy, but that has happened more times than I can tell you. I've heard that happen over and over and over again. So I say to my sponsees, and as a sponsor, I think it's really important to be really, you know, on top of that and say, if you're going to change your food, you need to call and recommit it. You don't eat non-committed foods. So the whole point of this, I mean, obviously there's 1,000 things about the food plan we could talk about, but the whole point is that you need to know the food plan if you're going to sponsor people for food. You just need to know the food plan, and then you need them to know the food plan. So my sponsees have to read the food plan. And not just once, twice, three times, four times. They have to take it with them. When they go out to eat, they have to have it with them. I was at a fellowship one time, and a fairly new person was with us, and she ordered a salad, and something came on it that we don't eat. Well, she was new, and she didn't know. She hadn't read the food plan. So she was starting to eat it, and I said, you know what, we don't eat that. It's not on the food. Oh, I didn't know. You know, you have to let them know. You have to be very vigilant about the food, because if the food goes, you don't have anything else. Okay. So that tedious stuff is over now, bless you. So the main thing that I want to talk about before I open it up is that we all sponsor a little differently. I mean, I think the consistency is really important, and we talk about sponsoring you know, we all sponsor according to the same guidelines, which it used to say, you know, back in the Stone Age when I started, that we all sponsored the same, which is really not true, because as a sponsor, I'm sure you know that you could have three different sponsees and you sponsor them all different because people are different, right? But the guidelines have to be the same. And so one of the things that I want to talk about is intention, okay? Because the intention has to be consistent. The intention has to be that I am sponsoring you for the purpose of you having abstinence and recovery. That has to be the intention. The intention is not for me to be the food police. The intention is not for me to punish you. The intention is not any of that. The intention is to try to express and give to my sponsees what I believe, which is that this is a fatal disease, that I will die if I don't stay abstinent, that I have to be willing to go to any lengths to do whatever I have to do to stay abstinent, whatever that is. And that is what I have to express to my sponsees. And how I do it varies from sponsee to sponsee, depending on what their challenges are. So I may have a sponsee who has, you know, a husband and three children and two jobs, right? So I may not suggest that she go to a meeting every day, because that's a little unrealistic. But if she goes to three meetings a week with all that going on, then she's gone to any lengths. Whereas I may have a sponsee who's retired and isn't married and doesn't have anything, you know, pressing on it as a job or whatever, and could go to a meeting every day, three meetings a week is not going to any lengths. So the intention has to be that I'm trying to help you to follow the tenets of the program for your recovery. But it may be different from person to person, depending on their situation, right? So the other thing is, one of the things that is, I think, very confusing for people, and it's a pet peeve of mine, so I'm just going to say it, you know, is in the blue book, the sponsor book, it says what's required for each level of sponsorship. So for a food sponsor, you have to have 30 days of abstinence and have completed 30 days of questions and have taken the step up. For inventory, you need to have 30 days of abstinence and finished your inventory. For step, you need 60 days of abstinence and have finished the steps, and 90 days for maintenance and the maintenance questions. Okay? Now, what I'm finding is that sponsors aren't telling their sponsees if they have a slip. Let's say somebody's a food inventory step sponsor and they have a slip, and then they get their 30 days back, and then they stand up and say, I'm a food inventory step sponsor. You can't be, because you need 60 days of abstinence to be a step sponsor. Yet they're standing up with 30 days and saying, I'm a food inventory step, sometimes even a maintenance sponsor. They're saying, I'm a full service sponsor with 30 days. That's not what it says. But sponsors are not telling. So for me, when I have a sponsee who has slipped and gets back, when she gets 30 days, I say, you can now step up, you can stand up as a food and inventory sponsor. In 30 more days, you can then be a step sponsor. You know, these are little things, but it's the consistency of it, right? We all have to be doing the same thing, and we all have to be following what the program says. And so, and these are important things. And so whenever somebody stands up with 30 days and says they're a maintenance sponsor, I get like a thing. And it's not because they don't deserve to be a maintenance sponsor. It's not because I judge them as being bad or anything. It's because it's not what the program says. And my life depends on this program. My life, and I mean literally, literally my life depends on this program, on following what the program says. And I have had and continue to have sponsors who follow the guidelines of recovery. And that's the only way that I can survive. So that's what I want to pass on. So these are important pieces of information. Now, the other thing I do want to say is that sponsorship is an awesome responsibility. It is. It's scary, especially when you're starting out. It's an awesome responsibility. Now, we are not responsible for people's abstinence or people's recovery. I can't make anybody be abstinent just because I sponsor them. I can't make them go out. I mean, when I first started, I thought, oh my God, if I say the wrong thing, they're gonna go out and eat, and that's all my fault, you know? I can't make anybody go out. I can't make anybody be abstinent. I am not responsible for your program, even if you're my sponsee. However, I do have a responsibility to you, because when I say yes, when you ask me to sponsor you, I am agreeing to be there for you, and I am agreeing to share with you what I know of the program, and I am agreeing to answer the phone when you call. I mean, it makes me crazy when I hear people say, yeah, I've called my sponsor 3 days in a row and they haven't answered. you know, I mean, if you've planned it in advance, that's one thing. But if you just don't answer the phone, I mean, I make a commitment to you, you make a commitment to me. So if a sponsee doesn't call me, I address it because I've agreed to be there. You have to call. But I have to be there too. And as a sponsor, it is a responsibility that you take on. Now, we have to do it because you can't keep unless you give it away. And sponsoring is a basic, basic, valuable part of this program. But it is a responsibility, and we have to take it seriously. And I have noticed that people coming from other programs have a little bit more difficulty with the structure of our sponsorship relationships because we talk every day. We do questions every day. We talk to our sponsees every day. We meet with them to do step-ups and ceremonies, and we meet them at meetings. And I prefer to have my sponsees come to meetings that I go to so I see them and I engage with them face-to-face. Other programs aren't as structured as that. And you know, I think in other programs you could talk to your sponsor once a month or once a week, or, you know, it's different. But you know what? We need it. We need it. And so when you agree to sponsor somebody, you are taking on a responsibility. Now, does that mean you have to know everything? Absolutely not. Oh, my goodness. So when I first started sponsoring and sponsee would ask me a question, I go, I'm going to call my sponsor and call you right back. You know, it's like, that's why we have sponsors, right? So if I don't know, I ask my sponsor. And if she doesn't know, she asks her sponsor. You don't have to know everything, but you do have to be there. You do have to be willing to help. This is what we do. This is what we do. This is how we carry the message, right? This is a lot of times when a newcomer comes in, the sponsor is the first exposure that they have to the program. And if they have a negative interaction or a negative experience with a sponsor, sometimes that really affects them in a negative way, and they feel that the program's done. And I've had so many stories like that. I had somebody come to me very upset because they met with a sponsor to read their inventory, and while they're reading their inventory, the sponsor's snoring. You know, we're very sensitive people. You know, I mean, that's devastating. Now, I would venture to say that it had nothing to do with the content of the inventory, I would think. But she was devastated. I mean, that, you know, that's devastating. So, again, we're not responsible for other people's feelings, but we do have a responsibility, and we have to be present, and we have to be an example of the program, especially to the sponsees who are new. And that's where I get back to. You know, when we go out there and try to recruit new members, right, and we try to get people to come to the program, we have to take care of them when they get here. We have to take care of them. You know, and we can't just ignore them when they come to a meeting. When, you know, and I get to be an example for my sponsees because at every meeting where there's a newcomer, I welcome the newcomer in my share. Because when I was new, I was terrified. I was sitting in a room with 50 people I didn't know. I was terrified. I felt self-conscious. And somebody said, welcome to me when she shared. And all of a sudden, my whole body just went, whew, okay. You know, and I do that. We pass those things on. I have, as a sponsor, I think you have to consider how other people are feeling, right? I'm there, I'm the sponsor, and even if I have 30 more days than you, you're brand new, I have 30 days. I have 30 more days than you. So I should be behaving better than you. You know? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I may not be perfect, but I should be behaving a little better than you. And, you know, and along the way, that's what I keep in my mind. I got to stay a little bit ahead of my sponsees, you know, and not just in the questions or in the weight or anything, but really more in the process of recovery. Because, you know, being a sponsor is invaluable. We can't do this without our sponsors. I don't know about you. I couldn't do this without my sponsor. I couldn't do it without my sponsor when I first got here. And I can't do it today without my sponsor. So as a sponsor, it's really, really important that we consider who we're dealing with. And remember, for me, it's really hard. You know, when you're 30, 60, 90 days and you're working with a newcomer, you know, you were a newcomer right around the corner. You remember how it felt and all that. But when you have 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, and you're working with a newcomer, I'm like, ugh! You know, it's like, I have to remember, you know what? They're new. They're scared. They're sensitive. They don't know what I'm talking about. They don't believe me. They don't trust me. That, you know, all those things that I had when I was new. but you forget. So, you know, I have to remind myself and I have to be patient, right? Because I want you to be where I am. I want you to be happy, joyous, and free today. Now, right now, you know, and it doesn't happen that way. But I forget that it took me however many years it took. So there's really a necessity for consciousness when you're a sponsor. I remember years ago there was somebody who would walk around and go, I sponsor 35 people. That's not possible. It's not possible to sponsor 35 people. It's just not possible, right? Because you're not giving anything to anybody. Right? Now, I've had a lot of people when they're new come and say, I don't understand why nobody's available. Everybody says they're not available. That's just rude, you know, it's like, and I have to explain that we only have so much time to give. And if we take on too many sponsees, then we're cutting back on helping the people that we have. And it's unfortunate. I mean, you know, I wish I didn't have a job and I could just sponsor 24 hours a day, but that's not realistic, right? It takes time. We have to be able to give the time to these sponsees because they're going to go out in the world. It's like raising children. I mean, I haven't done that, thank goodness, but I would think it's pretty much the same. It's like you get them when they're new, you teach them, you nurture them, you feed them, you take care of them, you share with them, if you're a healthy parent, you share with them, you experience strength and hope. That's not where I come from, but, you know, and I'm assuming. And then you send them out into the world. Now, if you send them out into the world and they don't know the food plan, they're in big trouble, right? So you've sent them out into the world. You've said to them, okay, you have 30 days. I'm now stepping you up as a food sponsor. I want you to stand up and say you're available, which is what you should do, right? Tell them, say they're available. But if you do that and they don't know the food plan, or they don't know what to do, then you have done a disservice because you've now put them out there to do something with a newcomer or somebody who's asking for help, and they don't have the tools to do it. They don't have the tools. We have to give them the tools to do it. Otherwise, it doesn't carry on. And this is what's happening, I think, in our fellowship right now. And I'm not saying everybody, clearly, but I have found that just from outreach and talking to people and doing these workshops where it's amazing to me how much information people don't know. How many people came up to me after the workshop we did in Las Vegas and said, I didn't know you can't do that, or I didn't know I can do that, or my sponsor never told me I could do that. I mean, it's amazing. So it's really, really important because I don't want this program to die, right? And because then I will die. And we have to pass these things on. It's really, really important. So the last thing I want to say before we open it up is, and hopefully you guys are thinking of some good questions, but that's not me, thank goodness, I want to go back to sort of the intention thought that I was talking about earlier, because like I said, this is really a passion for me. You know, when you're around a long time, service changes. You know, when you first come in, when I first came in, I did coffee at the Cole Street Sunday morning meeting for 2 years. I made 2 huge pots of coffee. A couple of girls have drunk my coffee. I'm sorry about that. And I put out chairs and I, you know, I did cleanup. And then you move on to the secretary and the literature. And then you move on to other things, you know. And you just have, as you're here and more involved, the service becomes on a different level. So recently I have felt that my service has to be in trying to maintain the integrity of the program. Now I don't mean that like, oh, it's my job to like make sure everybody's doing it right. In the 12 and 12, it talks about that the old timers, their job is to pass on the service commitments to the newer people and give them opportunities, but to stay and maintain the integrity of the program. We need to maintain the integrity of the program. And it's really important that we don't let those things slide. So I feel like recently my area of service is to try to help people who are struggling with not knowing how to sponsor or not having a strong sponsor. I get so many questions from people that say, you know, I really need structure and guidance. And my sponsor says, oh, just do whatever you want. You know, it's just, I really need someone to tell me what to write about. And my sponsor says, well, just write about your day or something. And that's fine. I don't judge because I don't know what happens between a sponsee individually. I mean, I've been on the other end of that where I've had people judge what my sponsees have told them. that I tell them. And you never know what goes on behind closed doors, so to speak, right? Because, like, I had a sponsee who was literally overdosing on bottled water. Now, I know that sounds silly. We should drink a lot of water and all. But she was so overdosing on bottled water that she couldn't sit 10 minutes in a meeting without going to the bathroom. It was affecting her life. She couldn't drive from one place to another without stopping to go to the bathroom. We're crazy. We are crazy people. And she was... so. She had to commit and weigh and measure her water. Well, that sounds stupid. So what does she do? She goes to a meeting and she shares how her sponsor is making her commit her water. You know, I'm like, well. So I try to be careful because I don't know how things came about. So I don't get in the middle of sponsee stuff. But I always do say, then you need to talk to your sponsor about it. You know, if you need more structure, you have to say, I need more structure, or get another sponsor. Right? So as a sponsor myself, I try to listen to my sponsees as well, because some of my sponsees can be very proactive and I don't have to tell them to go to meetings because they're at meetings every day. They love the meetings. They're going to the meetings. And then I have other sponsees who don't want to go to the meetings. And then I have to say, okay, what meetings are you going to this week? I have to pay attention to what's going on with my sponsees so that I can give them the best guidance based on my experience. And the intention has to come from a place of, I want you to succeed. See, this is a brand new concept for me, for sure. I did not come from a place where people wanted me to succeed. Okay? My parents did not want me to succeed. They wanted to succeed, and they wanted maybe me to succeed so that they would look good, because to the day they die, they kept saying, oh, look how great you did. We must have done a great job. And not really, no. In spite of you, I've made a life for myself. But, you know, thank you very much. So, you know, but really, truly, all of us in here have no other agenda than for wanting all of us to succeed. And when I get sponsees, I want them to succeed. I want them to be happy, joyous, and free. I want them to have what I have. I want them to experience the huge miracles that happen when you work the program the way it's written. So I come from that place. However, I will say that there used to be a saying in the program years ago that, you know, how is the last house on the block. And, you know, when you've tried everything else, then you go to Howe, because there's, like, nowhere else to go. And that Ruth is the last room in the house. You know, don't ask Ruth to sponsor you until you've gone through everybody else. Am I lying? No. Okay. So my reputation preceded me. But you know what? I didn't take offense to that, because the truth is that I sponsor as seriously as the disease is. Now, if the disease is not serious for my sponsee, or they don't want to work it to the extent that I work it, because maybe they feel they don't need to, or they're not ready to, that's totally fine. I don't have an investment in that. But I sponsor the way I work the program, and I work a very strong program, because if I don't, I will die. And I don't know any other way to do it. And what I would love is for everybody to be like that, for everybody to work this program the way it's written, because it's life or death, and then pass that on to the people they work with. That's what I would love to see. And it can only be good for everybody. Right? And then I think through doing that, and everybody being energized who's already in the program and sponsoring that way, and being enthusiastic about when people have 7 days, and then when people, you know, get 30 days. And, you know, I have a friend in Las Vegas who, you know, after years and years of struggling, stepped up as a maintenance sponsor, and I'm, like, more excited than she is about it. I'm telling everybody. You know, I think that's huge. I mean, you struggle and struggle, and then you have enough abstinence and enough recovery to be a maintenance sponsor and pass that on. These are the kinds of successes that give us a life. And I embrace those, I celebrate those, and I want that for my sponsees, and I want that for their sponsees. I love it. I sit in meetings, and there's, you know, 10 people four or five generations of sponsors all in a line. This is what the program is about. When Bill started the program, one talking to another, it was a string of people. When you read the big book, the stories in the big book, you know, each story is the first person, the second person, the third person who got sober, the fourth person who got, the first person in Detroit, the first person in Canada. This is what we do. We are a string of recovery. We are a string. We're a chain of people linked together, and we link together through sponsorship. This is what we do. And so I can't emphasize enough how important it is. And I will say that I have had many sponsees over the years. This is a very controversial opinion. It is my opinion. So take with it whatever you'd like. Leave the rest. I know that the majority of the people experience slips in this program. And, you know, obviously fabulous when you do slip that you come back. Obviously, we don't want you leaving, but slips scare me. They scare me to death. So I'll have sponsees who call me and say, well, had a slip, but I'm going to get right back on. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Why am I more afraid than you are? This is scary. This is serious. Okay, you slipped. It's not about beating you up. It's not about feeling bad. It's not about having failed. It isn't about any of that. It's about life and death. So when a sponsee slips, the first thing that I do is I address what happened. Why did that happen? How did that happen? What led up to that? What was going on? So we don't have to do it again. And I've had people come up to me and say, oh, I'm so-and-so. I'm a chronic slipper. You know? Oh, I just want, you know, my heart just like rips out of my chest, a chronic slipper. And, you know, and I say, you know what? You're only a chronic slipper if that's what you say you are. Stop doing that. You know, it's like, ah! And And I know we're addicts, we're powerless. We get consumed with compulsion and obsession and all these kinds of things. And that's why sponsorship is so important, because we can see it before they can. I can tell you that I can pick up the phone and hear two words out of my sponsee and I know she's in trouble. Now you can't tell me that that's not true for you. When you've talked to somebody every morning for a year, you know when they're in trouble. You know when something's going on. You see them at a meeting and you can tell immediately something's happening. And I don't want to wait till they call me and say, I ate. I want to talk about it now. I want to address it now so we can deal with it before you eat. The eating is the end of the slip. Somebody said to me once, eating is proof of the slip. Right? So I'm slipping along. By the time I eat, I have now proved that I have been slipping for 3 months. Well, I would like to catch it way before then, because for me, it's Russian roulette. If I eat, I don't know that I'll get back. I love when people say, well, I eat and I'll just get back on. And I eat and I'll just get back on. But you know what? There's going to be one day where you don't get back on. And look at the seat next to you. Think about the person that was in the program a year ago that isn't around anymore. And you will believe me that there's going to be a bite that you can't come back from. And I want to take that chance, and I want my sponsees to if I can help them. I can't control it. If that's what they're going to do, that's what they're going to do. But I can help them. I'm the only one that can. And I don't mean me. I mean me, us. We are the only ones that can help them. Therapists are helpful, but they're not going to help with this compulsive eating, right? Their AA sponsor is not going to help them with compulsive eating. It's not going to happen. We are the only ones that are going to help people to be successful in this program. And it's an awesome responsibility, and we have to take it as such. And it's really, and it's all written down. So it's not like we have to be brilliant or we have to have been abstinent for 800 years before we know enough information. All we have to have is one more day than somebody else. You know, it's all. We're all on the path together. But we have to know what we're doing. We have to pass on consistent information that is the food plan. We cannot make up our own abstinence. We can't let our sponsees make up their own abstinence. We can't make up the rules. You know, I had a sponsee one time call me and say, I ate da-da-da-da-da. Are you going to call it a slip? I've heard that many times. You know, oh, I did this. I wonder if my sponsee is going to tell me I slipped. We don't decide if you've slipped. You read the book. The book says very clearly, a slip, eating more than you're supposed to, eating something not on the food plan, eating between meals. If you did one of those things, it's a slip. I'm not calling it a slip. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. And that's, we're only able to do that because we're consistent, because it says it in everybody's book. It's not like the book over there says, well, if you eat between meals, it's not really a slip. But this book says if you eat between meals, it is a slip. Well, I'm going to go with that book. I'm going to use, and people do that with sponsors. I'm going to go with that sponsor. I had a sponsee come to me, and she said, and this is another hot topic, medical abstinence, but she came to me and she said, you know, I get kind of woozy, weaky between lunch and dinner, so I think I probably need to have a snack in between lunch and dinner. I'm probably hypoglycemic, so, you know, I think I need to do that. And I said, well, I think we should try other things first, like maybe don't spread your meals so far apart. If between lunch and dinner is hard, do lunch late. You know, find solutions that are still abstinent rather than adding food. So we talked about this for probably 2 weeks, every single day. I'm like, I'm not talking about this anymore. You're not doing it. So she comes to me and she says, okay, I'm giving you one last chance because I found someone who will sponsor me and let me do that. So are you going to let me do it or not? And I said, no. And she left. And she's not here. She's not here. She's not here. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's really important. You know, we have to stick to what the food plan says. And if it's like pitting mom against dad, well, if mom says no, I'm going to go ask dad. Well, if mom and dad aren't on the same page, then it doesn't take a rocket scientist, just an addict, to know how to manipulate that situation, right? So I'm going to ask 20 sponsors until I find the sponsor that's going to tell me it's okay to do that. And they will, unless we're consistent, unless every sponsor is following the book. So if somebody wants to eat between meals and every sponsor they talk to says that's a slip, it's a slip. And eventually they're going to surrender to that, right? But if they can find someone who'll say, no, it's okay, really, I understand. Yeah, I get a little weak during between lunch and dinner too, so go ahead. Or the truth is you can't sponsor somebody in a way that you're not doing it. So if you're eating between meals or you're doing stuff that isn't really the food plan, it's very hard to sponsor somebody and say, no, you can't eat between meals if that's what you're doing. It has to be consistent. We all have to be doing the same thing. And I feel really strongly about this because it's only through that that we're going to expand the opportunity for the people out there who are suffering. There are more people out there today suffering from this disease than ever before. When I got abstinent 23 and a half years ago, I was always the fattest person in the room. I was almost 300 pounds. You saw my pictures. I was always, no matter where I went, I was always the fattest person in the room. If today I was looked how I looked then, I wouldn't even come close. Especially in Las Vegas, right, with the buffets and stuff. I wouldn't even come close. We sit in restaurants at Fellowship, and every person that walks in is fatter than the one before. It breaks my heart. There are people suffering everywhere. We have to be able to help. And I think it starts with sponsorship. So I'm going to open it up if people have questions, any specifics or any general questions about sponsorship. But I will say thank you. Hold that thought for a second, because I do love applause. But I will say that you do need to sign this page before you ask the question. And you need to sign first and last name for the sound thing. So if you do have a question, maybe come up and sign quickly so we don't waste time, right? So maybe a few of you come up at once, sign, and we'll just make a little line here. And now maybe I'll sit down. Oh, now, please. Thank you. The pen's not working. Who has a pen that works? Oh. Judy, you go first. Okay. Go for it.
I actually have two questions.
Okay, because if one is good, okay, two is better.
Number one, I had a sponsee who got a note from her doctor saying she could have 10 almonds between lunch and dinner because she was hypoglycemic, blah, blah, blah. Is that all right? Because her doctor signed a note.
Okay. So I did say that this was a hot topic, medical abstinence. And anyone who's been at the convention all week in the World Service Conference knows that it is a hot topic. Here's what I would say. Two things. One, medical professionals do not understand our disease. They do not. I had a friend in the program. Oh, I may need some water now. Sorry. A friend in the program who got sick, maybe a stomach flu, something like that, called her doctor, said, oh, I'm throwing up, and this and that. And he said, drink 7-Up. And she said, diet 7-Up? He said, no, regular. She says, well, you know, I don't do sugar. I said, don't be ridiculous. You know, and she didn't do it because this is life or death. I'm not going to drink regularly, right? But medical professionals, and I think that's one of the things that as a group, as a program, we're going to reach out to medical professionals and educate them more, but they don't understand. So to answer your question, here's what I do. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. God forbid I say to somebody, no, don't do that, and then they drop dead. That would not be good for me. That would not be good for me. So... Oh, it took you a minute. Okay. But what I do is I say, let's try to find a solution that fits our food plan that may help you before we try something that doesn't fit our food plan. So, we try whether it's, changing up what you're eating at lunch or what you're eating at dinner, some within the guidelines of what's abstinent to try to figure it out. Now, if your sponsee really, truly wants to be abstinent, they'll be willing to do that. Okay? So that's what I say. I mean, obviously, clearly, there are medical conditions that do require change. If you're pregnant, if you're something, somebody said once, well, if you're diabetic, you have to have sugar. I'm like, well, no, if you're diabetic, but you're on the food plan, you're not going to crash. You don't need sugar. You only need sugar. Right? So it's that kind of thing. But I think the most important thing is to delve into the motivation. Because if the motivation is to really, truly be successful, but they're struggling between lunch and dinner, and that was the only solution they came up with, then maybe they're willing to find other solutions that fit the program. You know, whether it's eating different kinds of proteins that sustain you or whatever, eating later, like I said. So thank you. So that's what I do. Now, that said, you do not have to sponsor somebody for medical abstinence. If that's not comfortable for you, if you have someone who is requiring or it's necessary and you're not comfortable with it, you do not have to sponsor it. Okay? And it says in the Forever Abstinent book that most changes that people try to make for medical abstinence do not fit with our program. Mm-hmm. And if you really seriously have a medical condition that you have to do something that's so off program that it really isn't going to allow you to work a program, then maybe you need to go somewhere else. And that's something that you have to work out with your sponsee, right? But for me, the most important thing is motivation. I'll tell you a story. I had a sponsee. She had her 30 days. Right before she was getting her 30 days, she peaked to the rest of the food plan. You know, I tell sponsees, don't look ahead, because it just messes you up. And she said, okay, so second 30 days, why can't I have... Now, those were not on the food plan then, okay? And I said, because it's not on there. Well, I don't understand. It's very healthy. And I don't understand. I said, it's not on there. I don't ask. When I started, there were no on the food plan. I didn't ask, why aren't there on the food plan? There are no I didn't question it. So she's like, well, I don't understand. And I said, well, you know what? We just don't do it. We just don't do it. 2 days later, she calls me hysterical from the Sizzler bathroom because she'd gone to her doctor and said, isn't it okay if I have a... and didn't tell him anything else. And he said, of course. So she went across the street, figuring she's going to have a... and ends up eating every bar they have there and calling me from the bathroom sick to her stomach. So what I'm talking about is, the motivation. And that's what you get to talk to your sponsee about. What's the motivation for doing that? Is it because you're really struggling and you want to be abstinent, but you're having a hard time? Or is it because you want more food than you're really allowed to have, or you want to have these things and you're obsessed about it? So hopefully that helps.
Oh, now, my second question, what if you have a sponsee that you've had for a number of months and all of a sudden she stops calling you? Would you call her?
There's nothing written about that, so there's no right or wrong. Some people will, some people won't. And I don't think there's a right or wrong about it. It really all depends on you and how you feel about it. So for me personally, I don't call. Unless I think, something happened, like they were going to have surgery and then I never heard from them or something. But if they just stop calling, I'm not the one that left. They're the one that left. I'm still here. Okay. They know where I am. If they want, they will call. But for me to call, but other people have a different opinion. They feel, maybe if I call, that'll bring them back. Or maybe, they'll know I care about them. So it's not written anywhere. Now, the only thing close to that is where people say, well, if they don't call you for 3 days, they're fired or something like that. And that's not true either. What it says is if they don't call you for 3 days, you're not sponsoring them. Now, if they call you on the fourth day and still want to continue, then it's up to you to sponsor them again. But if they don't call you for 3 days in a row, then you're not sponsoring them. Because when you sponsor them, they're calling every day.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. We got, did you, everybody signed? Okay. That's fine. Okay, we got Kelly.
Hi, I'm Kelly, compulsive eater.
Hi, Kelly.
Thank you. Hey, Ruth, I love your enthusiasm for the subject. Thank you so much. What I would love to have you share is what a typical call would be with your sponsees. Do you ask for the meal plan? Do you do this? What kind of form? Do you have a special format that you use with everybody? Could you share that with us?
Yes. Well, first, I do the food first.
Okay.
Because we do that and get that out of the way. Mm-hmm. Because the food, committing the food is imperative. And if we start talking about other stuff, and then our time is up, and off they've gone, then now they're eating food that's not committed. So now when I start with somebody brand new, that is what I say. I say, okay, call me tomorrow morning. You're gonna tell me what you're gonna eat. You're gonna tell me where you know what meetings you've look at the meeting list. Tell me what meetings you think you can get to this week, and then I will give you a question, and then you read me your answer to your question. So always the food first, and that's even with maintenance people. Always the food first. Then usually reading an answer to a question if they're doing writing, and then anything that may be coming up for them, right? So I say, how was your day? What's going on? Anything you want to talk about? But food first, then the answers to the question, and then anything that may be coming up.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, you're welcome. Yeah.
Opal, compulsive eater.
Hi, Opal.
Ruth, thank you for your share, and thank you for your service. And my question is, if someone has stepped up as a food inventory and step sponsor, SLIPS, they've done their inventory and step work, do they need to redo the inventory after 60 days and redo the step work after 60 days or 90 days?
Excellent question. Okay, so this is, it's not written anywhere. Technically, once you've done it once, you are qualified to sponsor it. So even if you have a slip and then get back on, you don't have to do the inventory again in order to qualify to be an inventory sponsor. You only have to do it once. So you only have to do the 6 through 12 questions once, and then you are technically qualified to sponsor on that level. However, one of the criteria that I do is if it's somebody who slipped and got right back on, then no. They do their 30-day slip questions, and then they're able to be a food and inventory sponsor, and then in 30 days, a step sponsor. And then we continue to work on whatever it was we were working on when they slipped. Okay? If they have left the program and come back 8 years later, we start over. Now, sometimes what I've done is that I don't have them do the childhood and adolescence part of the inventory again, but I do have them do the adulthood since they've left the program. So they answer the questions with more current information so that that's what we can work on and look at. So, and maybe we will do the step questions again if there are new defects or if there are defects that are still happening that didn't get resolved the first time, then we would do it again. But technically, in order to qualify to sponsor at that level, you only have to do it once.
You have ESP because you answered everything I was going to ask you.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Thank you. Excellent question.
Hi, everybody. I'm Deborah. I'm a grateful compulsive eater.
Hi, Deborah.
Ruth, first, I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome.
Just thank you. And those early days of my abstinence, you're part of them, so thank you. I just first want to say thank you for bringing up chronic slipping, because my hope for our program is that we just take that word out of our vocabulary, that it's just we're powerless over food and our lives have become unmanageable. So that's my hope. I want to bring up the topic of maintenance, because I too feel we need some more education in our program about maintenance and what that is. Recently, I helped a newcomer who went on to maintenance, and his sponsor just wasn't really able to help him, who really just thought that, maybe putting a grain on, was enough, and how that process. So maybe if you could share your experience, strength, and hope on maintenance, and maybe how we maintenance sponsors and long-timers can assist, Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't dwell too much on the maintenance part because I wasn't sure how many people are there, and I really wanted this to to be helpful for everybody. But the goal is maintenance. I mean, that is the goal. That's why we do this. I mean, Bill W. said, my intention is to be sober forever, but I'm going to work it one day at a time. So if my intention is not to get on maintenance and live my life as a clean, abstinent, healthy, sane person, then there's no point in being abstinent today. Now, I work it today. I don't worry about what am I going to do a year from now. But my intention has to be maintenance. So maintenance is very important. It's just not a lot of people get there, unfortunately. But from a food perspective with the maintenance, it's very tricky. And that's why you have to have a maintenance sponsor when you start doing the maintenance food plan. Because it's very, as a matter of fact, when I started, my sponsor said, don't even look at the maintenance food plan. Now, when I started, they were two different pamphlets. So she said, don't buy it, don't look at it, don't sneak it, nothing. And I'm a people pleaser, so I followed direction and I didn't look at it. But it's very tricky. So a lot of people try to go on maintenance using their regular food sponsors. Now, as food sponsors, you're not doing a service to them, so I would encourage that you encourage them to get a maintenance sponsor. Even if they're not at a place where they're ready to do the maintenance questions. I think there was a question earlier about, if you're at your goal weight, but you haven't finished your inventory or your steps or whatever, what do? You can continue to do that work with your regular sponsor, but you cannot do maintenance food without a maintenance sponsor because it is tricky. There's a lot of nuances about it. There are tantalizing foods on the maintenance food plan. I don't know how else to put it, And like I said earlier, it's like once you get to maintenance, they're not as exciting as they are when you're in your first 30 days and starving to death. I thank you for asking about this because as much as I was saying that being a sponsor is a responsibility and it takes work and it's a partnership, maintenance is even more so because you really have to pay attention. Your sponsee is weighing every week. There's adjustments that have to be made every couple of weeks sometimes, especially at the beginning. And because this is a lifetime thing, things change. Road gets narrower. People have to let go of food that they've been eating for years. They have to cut back. Their metabolism change. Some of us go into menopause. Things happen. And adjustments have to be made all along the way. So just from a food perspective, you have to sponsor people on maintenance very carefully. You have to really pay attention. And you have to have your own experience with it. You may not have the same experience, but you have to have your own experience where you're able to say to someone, I know, I freaked out when after 2 weeks I had put on a pound, oh my God, or oh my God, I'm too scared to add food because I think I'm going to be binging, or I'm eating so much food I feel like I'm compulsively eating, all those things. Maintenance people have gone through that already, and they can help you. The people who haven't done maintenance yet don't have that experience. So very important to be sponsored on maintenance. And as a maintenance sponsee, you have to be very strict about it. How I sponsor on maintenance is you do one change and you do it for a minimum of 2 weeks. The same change every day. Because I've had sponsees who want to do the extra fruit at breakfast today and the extra grain at lunch tomorrow and then the extra protein at dinner No. We do one change, and you do the same thing every day for 2 weeks. And then we see where you are. And then we make another change, and that's 2 weeks as well. So, otherwise, it's too crazy, and I've seen too many people go out because of the maintenance food. And it's not necessary. It's not necessary. It's not that scary. You just need help. So as a maintenance sponsor, and I encourage all of you to become maintenance sponsors. We don't have enough maintenance sponsors. So if you're not doing it for yourself, do it for us, right? Get to maintenance, become a maintenance sponsor, and be available to help people. Because when people get to maintenance, they absolutely need a maintenance sponsor. They cannot go without it. It's not like with an inventory sponsor, you do your first 30 days and your sponsor isn't an inventory sponsor, so you have to get a new one. And, you take a couple of weeks to find a new inventory sponsor before you start your inventory or whatever. I don't recommend it, but that's not going to kill you. But you get to maintenance and you don't get a sponsor for 3 weeks and you're doing it on your own, that will kill you. So we need maintenance sponsors, and please, if you're going on maintenance, you need to work with a maintenance sponsor. Did that answer your question? Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks. Okay. Oh, I just spilled the water all over the place.
I appreciate your passion.
Oh, thanks.
I'm Camille. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Camilla.
Thank you for the class. How do you feel about texting and email as opposed to a phone call every day?
We were just talking about that. I refer to myself as old school, okay? Old being the operative word. And, clearly, when I started program, there were no cell phones. So when people say I couldn't make my outreach calls, I had to stop at a payphone to make my outreach calls, okay? Or I had to go home. I didn't have a cell phone. I couldn't talk in the car as I'm driving to work or whatever and call and say, hey, I'm doing an outreach call, you know? So I'm old school. I do not like texting. I do not like email. I don't even like my sponsees to write their questions or their inventories on a computer. Something happens when you write with your hands that doesn't happen when you're on a computer. So, you know, I struggle a little with this because I got to get together with the times. You know, I got to understand that the world is different today and technology is vast and, you know, and all of that. But I also have to remember that I'm a compulsive eater and there are just certain requirements that I have to have. So I don't allow texting as a regular thing. I mean, if one of my sponsees is somewhere and has to change her food and can't make the call and texts instead, you know, once in a while, you know, but if it's every day or whatever, no, I say that does not work, right? So I really do prefer, I have to talk to my sponsees every day. So the emailing, and I sponsor people in New Mexico, I sponsor people in Connecticut, I sponsor people in Los Angeles, and I'm in Las Vegas. So, you know, and today there's no excuse. Everybody's got 1,000 minutes on their phone or whatever. It's, you know, but I'm very old school about that. So I don't go for that stuff. And the truth is the sponsor decides the guidelines. So if a sponsor says, you don't text me, you call me, and the sponsee says, no, I'm not going to do that, you say, God love you. I am sure you will find a sponsor who will take your text. It's not me. And you find someone who's willing to call you because that's, you know, even with starting with somebody new, and I hear this sometimes, it makes me crazy, somebody will talk to a newcomer, and the newcomer, they decide to hook up, and so the sponsor says, so what time do you want to call me tomorrow? I'm like, what? My sponsor said, you call me at 6 a.m. I didn't know there was a 6 a.m. I said, is there a 6 in the morning, too? Because, you know, I'd roll out of bed at 8 o'clock to go to work. You know, but I was up every morning, 6 o'clock, looking at that clock, calling my sponsor, because she told me that that's the time. So it is the sponsor's responsibility to set the boundaries, okay? This is not a peer relationship, okay? This is a sponsor and a sponsee. The sponsor decides the boundaries. The sponsee does them or doesn't. The sponsee doesn't want to do them or can't do them, they move on to somebody else, right? But we, as sponsors, it doesn't help to accommodate what the sponsee wants. That's not helpful. That's not surrender. That's not willingness. That doesn't push their humility. It doesn't do that. Now, I surrender to what my sponsor wants, and then my sponsees surrender to what my boundaries are. So hopefully that answers your question. Yes, next.
My name's Deb. Compulsive eater.
Hi, Deb.
I have a question and a comment. The question is, can I have a sponsor outside of CEA if I know someone that I would like to take me through the inventory steps? Or anyone. I mean, not just me, mm-hmm. but outside of CEA. I have been told both.
Both, yeah, I'm sure, because it's a gray area, I think. I mean, the book says that you can give your inventory to anybody you want. So if you write your inventory and want to give it to your priest or you want to give it to your therapist, the fifth step just requires you tell it to another human being. So in terms of your writing, if you want to give your writing to someone else that other than your sponsor, that is okay, and I don't see anything wrong with that, and it does say that in the literature. In terms of being sponsored, that's a little trickier, right? Because, you know, we have certain guidelines. We have certain things we follow. So, you know, I guess we would have to say, you know, this is where the honesty part comes in, right? Am I doing it because I don't really want to be connected with how people, or I don't trust the how people, or I want to get away with something and this other person doesn't really know what I'm supposed to eat or doesn't know if I'm really telling the truth? You know, it's like you have to have some honesty about what's the motivation behind that. You know,
well, there's not enough sponsors available.
Now, I can understand that. I can understand that. But that's another reason why we need these kinds of workshops. What she said was, if you didn't hear, is there aren't enough sponsors. So if she needs a step sponsor and there aren't any available step sponsors, what do you do? Okay. Now, I will say, and most people will probably be mad at me for saying this, but most of the time, well, all the time, I'm not available because I sponsor a lot of people, and I always qualify as not available. But if somebody asks me and they're really willing and desperate, I will take them. So I think that even though there may be people who say they're not available, keep asking people, and you will find somebody who will be willing to do that. And that would be my first choice. If you absolutely can't find anybody, you know, then obviously you do the best you can. But I don't think somebody from the outside knows the nuances of what we do that will be as helpful as somebody in the program who's already gone through it. Yeah? 1 minute? Oh, God. Okay, one more question real quick.
Okay, my comment was earlier, you kind of, mentioned following the rules. Mm-hmm. And one of the beauties to me, I'm new, coming into CEA, was I was asked to follow the rules. And I had not done that in my life before. That's part of my disease. Mm-hmm. And I find that part of the surrender that's so great for me. So I don't think that's something that we should have to apologize. It's not being legalistic. It's realizing there are rules in life and I can't manipulate them. And then it goes into, do I want to recover mm-hmm. or not? So no apologies there. Okay. It's a good thing.
Yes. No. Structure and discipline. We absolutely have to stop. You
I just have a question about slipping and grains.
Okay. Why don't you ask me after?
Do you just keep not having them have grains?
I'll be available in the hallway. You can ask me there. Okay.
Sorry.